This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, I'm here with Simon Waghorn from mixture of Astrolabe and Whitehaven. You're the winemaker for both those brands.
That's right, Chris. Yeah, I'm a winemaker of about 20-odd years experience, and I've been, in the last 10 or so of those, I've been in Melbourne, making largely Sauvignon Blanc, but also a number of other varietals down there.
You're an owner of Whitehaven as well as part owner of Astrolabe, is that right?
Yes, at Whitehaven I'm a minority shareholder, and I've been there since the very start. I'm the technical guy in charge of the winemaking and viticultural side of the business, and work with a team of winemakers and viticultural staff there. With Astrolabe, I'm a half owner and more involved with the whole business, including the marketing and the administration of that.
We've been running some of your wines in our tastings for quite a while now. We started out with your O2 Whitehaven, and we've been recording the results from our wine tastings into our database, and we've got them laid out in front of us. We'll put some links to these so that people can see them online if they want to, but it's quite interesting, the shape of the graphs, isn't it? Not many people dislike it, and a lot of people sort of rate it a pleasure to drink.
That's good for me to see a graph like that, Chris, because we really make the wine to be a pleasure to drink, and it's all about sheer hedonism. We make Sauvignon for unselfconscious pleasure, really, for the drinker. So when I put together the wines, I'm focusing primarily on capturing all that classic intensity of the Marlborough style of Sauvignon Blanc, which is built around things like currant leaf and gooseberries. And within that, though, I'm trying to make the wine soft around the edges, trademark acidity, but not a harsh experience. So it's all about sheer pleasure, intense pleasure, I hope.
Do you want to talk a wee bit about the difference between, say, Whitehaven Sauvignon Blanc versus maybe the Astrolabe Sauvignon Blanc?
The main differences, I think, between the two wines is not so much in the wine making, it's in the source vineyards where I get the fruit from. The Whitehaven is a very large blend by comparison to the Astrolabe, and the source fruit for that comes from around about 40 different sites around the two main valleys of the Marlborough area, the Wairau and the Awatere, and it's planted in the western and the eastern and the northern, the southern and the central extremes of all those sub-localities that make up those two valleys. What that tends to mean is you get a variety of components to blend with, and when you put them all together after dropping out the components that I don't think make the grade for the Whitehaven style, what I'm left with is quite a heterogeneous sort of mixture of different versions of the Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc theme. Putting those together tends to rub off some of the corners, and you get a more complete and harmonious, well-integrated and seamless whole. And so with the Whitehaven style, we often see that year to year, the variation is very little, and the flavour profile and the consumer preferences are very even. With Astrolabe, our main fruit comes from two different vineyards. Because of only having the two vineyards, seasonally the variations can be a bit more extreme. So from one year to the other, we might see slightly more profound changes with the Whitehaven because we've got so many subclimates throughout, they're less evident. So I think that's probably the main difference. Once I get the fruit to the winery, it's the same way of making the wine, but the nature of the fruit just tends to be different because of the multitude of choices we can put in the blend.
I noticed the Whitehaven always seems to have a black currant-y aroma to it. A lot of people quite enjoy it. I know that Sauvignon Blanc can produce blackcurrant flavours, but it doesn't taste as typical as maybe some of the other savvies that are around. And Astrolabe does have a hint of it, but it doesn't seem to have as much intensity as, say, the Whitehaven. What's really driving that?
I think that's just the way I pick the fruit. Winemaking with Sauvignon Blanc and Marlborough is primarily it's about making sure the grapes are grown on the right sites in the right way, but the next sort of single biggest factor is the winemaking getting out from the winery, getting around the vineyards during the growing season and tasting the fruit to see when the fruit is ready to harvest. Back in New Zealand, we're allowed to tinker around with things like sugar and acid. One thing we can't affect at all is flavour. The flavour has to come from the fruit we bring into the winery. So it's critical as a winemaker that you pick at the absolute right time for flavour. So all I really concern myself with pre-harvest period is making sure that I get around the vineyards daily to taste the fruit, to make sure that I'm there at the time the fruit is ready to pick, and I can make the call to say, yes, these grapes have got to come to the winery right now. And with Whitehaven, I look for that currant-y flavour as one of my core indicators of style. That is the Whitehaven style. It's built around currant leaf and English gooseberry. So And I start to see those flavours dominating in the vineyard when the nettly grassiness is starting to dissipate a bit and the currenty gooseberry flavours are starting to gain ascendancy and a little bit of passion fruit's coming at the top end. That's when I say, okay, we've got to get these grapes back to the winery.
And how much window do you have for that?
Very short. It can be 3 or 4 days. So it's very important that you're sampling the fruit consistently and regularly on the way through to harvest. If you turn your back on them, you might go right through that magic window and be out the other side and the flavours might be starting to dissipate. So it's if you want to get that intense flavour, you have to be on the ball and on the spot.
What sort of changes in flavour do you get from, say, Sauvignon Blancs as they continue to ripen in the vineyard?
Initially, once the berries are starting to soften through the veraison period, you start off with quite an aggressive, grassy baseousness. It's a little phenolic at that early stage and coarse. It goes through sort of an unattractive, really green, grassy character through to a slightly more attractive, crushed nettles. And I quite like a little bit of that in my style around the margins. It's not central to our flavour profile, but it's a sort of like a subliminal addition that we like. Once you've gone through the nettles, you're starting to get into the more into the gooseberries. And some people refer to that area as sort of grapefruit as well. We get the Americans who are not familiar with the English gooseberries. When they're seeking out flavour descriptions, they start to talk about grapefruit or grapefruit pith. I see a little bit of that limey, lemony, grapefruity citrus just before the gooseberry starts to bite, and towards the end of the gooseberry phase is when I'm getting the currant leaf and the white currant flavours. And then when you go on through that, you start to get into ripe citrus and some tropical characters, including a lot of passion fruit, and sometimes even, if you leave the fruit too long, into ripe stone fruit.
So a lot of people make the New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc Marlborough style, you know, quite gooseberry. They're just picking it at that point, are they?
I think that's the case. We all do our own thing, and by and large, Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc as a category is pretty consistent, and most people recognise it when they see it. But for those of us that are working within that wine area down there, there are variations on a theme, and there are subtle house differences between one winemaker and another. The more you sort of look at them, the more you realise that it's not a sort of homogenous whole. I think definitely is a winemaker's choice what he prefers in a style. I think just coming out of gooseberry and into currant is better than central gooseberry, but I do quite like the gooseberry styles of my competitors, but it's just not the style I choose to make myself. And I think really it is a winemaker's choice.
What about Hawke's Bay, for example? They seem to make a lot more tropical fruit style wines. Why don't they pick the grapes a wee bit earlier and get some of those gooseberry, blackcurranty flavours coming through?
It's a good question. I have seen some producers do some early picking decisions on Hawke's Bay Sauvignon, and they do become more like the Marlborough model. I'm not sure whether they have the same intensity of flavour. I think what may happen is you're getting greener flavour, but you haven't had the sort of hang time of the fruit on the vines, the slow ripening to accumulate the layers of flavour and the intensity of flavour. I think that's where Marlborough has the advantage with its cooler climate, because we have some of the sunniest conditions to grow fruit in New Zealand. But what we do have that Hawke's Bay might not have is the more extreme temperature differences between day and night, and the cool nights and the longer, slower ripening period. So I think the slowness of the ripening is where the intensity comes in. You can pick fruit early in a warmer climate, but you're only going to get a sort of a shadow of what's possible if you pick the fruit ripe in a cool climate.
Yeah, sure, that sounds good. What's going on in Marlborough at the moment? Sauvignon Blanc, is that still king in the region?
Yes, Sauvignon Blanc is still dominating the new plantings in our area. Plantings are going on at great pace, and we're seeing new areas off the two main valleys starting to open up. Blind River is one of the big new developments in our area, which is further south than the Abertery. And I suppose, without looking at any statistics at the moment, I'd imagine that about 80 to 90% of the new plantings that are going into the ground are probably Sauvignon Blanc. There is a fair bit of Pinot going in, and also Pinot Gris is of interest to a few people. Apart from that, most of the other varieties are just standing still or declining, and things like Chardonnay are not being replanted, or sometimes are making way for Sauvignon or Pinot Noir. So we're starting to see Marlborough evolve and mature as a slightly more focused area where people understand what the advantages of the region are in terms of making wine for the world and where to put their best efforts. And rather than try to make a bit of everything for everybody, I think you started to see people realise that Marlborough is a specialist area.
Pinot Noir is still quite a new grape down there though, isn't it? You know, I think I had my first Pinot only about 4 or 5 years ago. How's that going down there? And it seems to be quite a different style as well to maybe some of the other Pinots out of New Zealand.
Yeah, Pinot Noir has had quite a major evolution in Marlborough over the last 5 years. When I arrived down in Marlborough from Gisborne in 1995, the only Pinot Noir in the ground tended to be a very inferior clone called Bac de Bel, which was suitable only really for sparkling wine, and another clonal variety called 10x5 Pinot Noir, which was a bit of a multi-purpose clone that we could use for both table wine and sparkling wine production. Shortly thereafter, we started planting clones like Clone 5 or the Pommard clone, and latterly we've been planting a lot of what we call the Dijon clones, including 777 and 667. Now, all these numbers and names mean nothing to the consumer, but for the winemaker, we're starting to see a stronger focus on planting the types of Pinot Noir that are geared to make the best red wine. Not only that, we're seeing a development of vineyard practice where the fruit is being planted at the right densities, being planted on the right sites, and it's being grown in the right way to start to all focus on making the very best Burgundian-style Pinot Noirs that we can. So there has been a major revolution and evolution in Pinot Noirs in the last 5 years, and the quality is continuing to improve every year.
You said it was Burgundian in style, but that Marlborough always seems to be more fruit-driven than maybe some of those savoury notes that you might normally expect from Burgundy.
I think that's correct. We appreciate that we're always going to have a slightly overt primary fruit character in our wines, and that's just because of our climate and our a little to do with our winemaking style. But fruit, just as in all our wines, just the natural gift that the climate and the soil has given us. So as winemakers with Pinot Noir, we expect, if we grow the grapes in the right way and pick them at the right time, we expect abundant black cherries and red cherries, a little bit of ripe strawberry, sometimes a little bit of ripe raspberry. And that's just a given. So for us, we have a very new world range of fruit flavours which are very bright and very pure and true. But where we're trying to take the wines, a lot of us is into the Burgundian style. I think a lot of us in Marlborough, though, are really striving to balance that beautiful, pure, attractive, ripe fruit with winemaking complexities that make the wine something other than a big fruit bomb. What we're trying to do, in my case, is add a lot of layers of complexity in the texture and on the nose that come from the winemaking rather than the fruit itself. So to that end, we're experimenting with a lot of wild fermentation, a lot of aging on lees and barrels, and a lot of experimentation with the types of wood and the char levels in the wood we're using.
Yep.
To try and, you know, just really to throw a whole mixture of aromas over the wine, but also to shore up the texture. For me, Pinot Noir is largely about getting the texture right. The fruit speaks for itself, and then the other part of the picture is the intrigue on the nose. That is the difficult one to nail and the sort of the holy grail for us.
Well, thanks very much, Simon. That's been great.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Cheers.